Hello and welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew.
How's it going, Drew?
It's going great. How you doing, James?
Pretty good, pretty good. Didn't have a very exciting week last week as far as, work and fun goes, but what about yourself?
Oh, really? I had a really exciting week, and that's just because I love my job and I work with an amazing company and crew.
Oh, yeah? So what was so lovely this week?
Just being able to hang out at the best office in the world with some of the best talent in the world.
Oh, yeah. Are you able to say where your office is?
Nope. It's a
cool
little
place.
Island. Yeah. I'm just saying that. I do really like my team. But I guess I had a pretty interesting week. I finally wrapped up most of the CI/CD stuff for the API that I was working on last week. And I couldn't wait to jump back in to Go and start doing some refactoring and build out some more features. And we came up with a different issue that was like, oh, okay, so not quite yet. There's this other thing to do.
Yeah.
So we're using some logging, just using like Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana, Elk Stack. And I guess we set it up kind of quickly to just make sure that we had logs. We did I think we did like a half day where everyone was like, all right, let's get our services.
Yeah.
Actually logging.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we did that. But then we had it kind of just like exposed to the world. So it's like, all right, well, let's get some repeatable steps here and let's add SSL and maybe put it behind Nginx. And so I started looking into stuff, and Packer was something that I looked into. So before, when I was using like Terraform to build kind of, I guess, for like infrastructure provision, there was kind of some steps where it was like, well, you know, like code deploy, for example, as we're using Amazon. So code deploy was something that I wanted to get an image that already had code deploy installed.
Okay.
And I guess I could maybe run user data on the instance beforehand to install code deploy.
Okay.
But another way to do that, I guess, would be with Packer. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of Packer works, I guess, with like multiple different platforms, or if you wanted to build locally, you can use like an Ubuntu image, for example.
Okay.
Like a regular ISO, and then you could build an image, and it would use I think it uses VirtualBox, but
oh, nice.
You could configure
cool.
it to use something else if you wanted. But in this case, I was building an Amazon AMI. And so in order to do that, I saw a little bit of info on using other sources, like maybe using an Ubuntu ISO and then converting that to an AMI. But I didn't see anyone that had success doing that.
Yeah. Do you know what the difference is between the AMI and the ISO? Is there,
I'm not really sure, to be honest, but I think, I really don't.
Yeah.
But anyway, the support for Packer was such that if you want to build an AMI, you start with a base AMI.
Mm-hmm.
So I started with the base AMI and added a bunch of things.
Fun stuff.
It was actually not, I don't know, there was a bit of a learning curve because I'd never used it before.
Yeah.
But looking back on it, it was really straightforward. But something that I do find kind of interesting, I wonder, so HashiCorp, they have, you know, Vagrant, Packer, Terraform.
Otto.
But they all have like really different configuration syntax.
Yeah.
Packer uses JSON, which is kind of nice because that's pretty universal. Whereas Terraform, I guess they use their own proprietary. I don't know if it's proprietary, but they use their own, kind of looks like JSON, but it's not.
Oh.
And I don't know why they made that decision. And then I guess with Vagrant, it's just Ruby.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this is just like different teams that got acquired by HashiCorp, or
I wonder,
you know, what was the thought process behind?
I mean, they're all I think they're all open source projects.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder if there was just like a discussion for, it might be just one of those like it started out with this, so it ended up with the result, and versus like a company like Atlassian maybe that builds everything, rebuilds everything when they buy stuff, or they buy stuff and then they change it to normalize it to their company. But I wonder if that's the case because it's open source.
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I wonder if like maybe it just works and
touch it.
In the cloud ecosystem, it seems like a lot of people are pretty familiar with like multiple scripting languages. So like going from like a JSON config to like a Ruby thing might not be that big of a deal for a lot of people, but I don't know.
Yeah, even from jumping from like JSON to YAML to like something else is like not that big of a stretch.
Right.
Like I'm using Ansible a lot and they use YAML for their configs. And it just took a little while to see, like, oh, this is what a list is. This is, like, a key, and this is a value.
Right.
Like, after maybe, you know, 30 minutes of playing with it, I'm like, okay, I get it. It's pretty straightforward. It's just, like, you know, most other configs or, like, INI files even are kind of wonky with, like, their key values.
Yeah, so speaking about Ansible, what would you use Ansible for?
So I think, actually, based on what you're saying, you can actually use Packer and stuff instead of Ansible. So Ansible basically lets you run commands over SSH. And also you can do them locally or to a remote server. It lets you choose a bunch of different, what they call inventory files. And these inventory files are different settings for different servers. So you might have two servers in the case of the app that I'm building, I have two servers, a stage and a production.
Yep.
And then I have local, of course, but I don't provision local. It's already set up.
Uh-huh.
And then when I have a bunch of different tasks in my Ansible file that I can play, it's like a play, it's called a playbook. Mm-hmm. So you play this playbook and it iterates through all these tasks. So the first time I run it on my servers, I'm basically installing things like Nginx, PHP, Memcache, Redis, a couple other things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's done in what's called a role.
Mm-hmm.
And so the role actually only runs once, because once that stuff's installed, you can set these little flags that tell Ansible not to run it again.
Mm-hmm.
So it does a little check saying, hey, is Nginx here? Yeah, it is. Okay, cool. Is PHP here? Yeah, okay, cool. Is Memcache here? You can do even like really granular things like, is this line in this file?
Mm-hmm.
So you can do like all these different tasks. So I wish I'd discovered it earlier, because with DigitalOcean, it would have been a nice way for us to provision these little DigitalOcean boxes.
That's kind of interesting when you said, is this line in this file? So I was using Packer.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm not that familiar with it yet.
Yeah.
And I just played around with it a little bit. But so one of the things that it does is it allows you to run scripts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have this really nice, quote unquote, awk line that's looking for a particular line in a config file and then putting another line under it for the config.
Yeah, exactly.
And I had like it takes this it's kind of a regex, mm-hmm. but I had a lot of trouble with trying to get it to accept square brackets, actually, to find
a square
something
bracket.
With square brackets, which turned out like that that the thing inside the square brackets that I was looking for never exists in that file without the square brackets, so I didn't really have to worry about that.
That's weird. I mean, with Ansible, you have all these core modules,
mm-hmm.
so one of them is like the service module, so you can restart services really easily. Or you have the line and file module, which lets you replace lines easily or append or prepend lines.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is a shell, so you can run just like general shell commands. There's a git one. There's one for, there's just a regular command one, which lets you just run some general commands that are maybe globally available, like cat or something like that, which
mm-hmm.
is different than shell. And so there's all these different modules. There's a cron one, which is actually awesome because it just says, insert this cron job
mm-hmm.
and don't if it's already there. It's like one line, which is awesome. So you don't have to keep checking and stuff. It just does it for you automatically, which is really sweet. So basically, when would you use it? I think I'm probably at the point where Packer actually might make more sense for me, because I've built the same server 3 times now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why don't I just build an AMI? And then every time I start my EC2, just click that one and launch it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's great for things like, I want to just provision this server in a particular way. I want to create this Nginx config. I want to create this PHP INI file, or... It's really great for templating too. So you can create these templates and actually put I guess what do you call them? It's actually like an Ansible template.
Right.
And you can have little keys and little places where you can echo out your variables inside your Ansible
like
config.
Environment variables.
Yeah, you can put environment variables in there. You can put defaults.
Uh-huh.
So it's really sweet when you have a different setup and you move from computer to computer, you can have these different templates and they're different every time based on the config that you write.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very file heavy in terms of the config. But you get a lot of control over exactly how you replicate the server every time. So, and it's quick too. It's nice and quick. You can have tags. You can tag tasks, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say only run this task when I have a tag in my command line when I run my Ansible playbook. Mm-hmm. Or there's actually a cool one too where you can have like state. So you can say only run this task when in production, when a production playbook is being played,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of sweet. So you might have something like clear the cache when you update the views directory or something like that. So I have a command that only runs in state in production to refresh the cache or restart memcached or something like that. So these very specific tasks that only run under certain conditions,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of different than the AMI. You'd still probably have to write an Ansible thing. If you were using Ansible, you'd probably still want to write one because you have special tasks for your app that run on the environment. So when would you use it? I don't know. It kind of
it's
like,
depends,
it's a very long answer, but I'm pretty happy with it. I wish I discovered it sooner.
Well, yeah, I'll definitely I'll take a look at it and play around maybe over the weekend or something.
Yeah,
and just kind of
it's really easy to get started too.
Nice. Yeah, or maybe I'll bring it up at the Zero Tech meetup. Did you know, I think the DDD CQRS ES meetup used to be the Ansible meetup?
Really?
I'm pretty sure that's the
interesting.
Case.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to give a special mention for CareCrew, who is hiring. And I think we mentioned it last week, but Kevin Malikoff's there. He's a person that wrote Knockback and Backbone ORM. You can check out his GitHub. It's github.com/kmalikoff. And we'll put a link to that down below in the show notes. But anyway, yeah, and a job link as well. And if you're interested in having your job featured on the Vancouver Tech Podcast, make sure to reach out to us. And that's either me at Drew or James, who's at James, on any of the local Slack channels.
Yeah. And we also have links to the Slack channels generally as well.
Yeah.
So you can always check that out.
All right. Looks like it's time for meetups around town. So we had a pretty cool week, I think, in the Vancouver scene. Did you go to anything?
I went to one thing and I saw you there.
Yeah, I know.
So I didn't realize you'd be there.
That's the same as me. I've been pretty busy at work lately and not going out to as much as I'd like to. But I did. I definitely went out to that one thing, which was
the Amazon RDS Tech Talk.
Yeah. And so that was cool. It was put on. We actually had two principal engineers, I think, there. And the talks were actually quite good. We had to sign an NDA, so I guess we can't talk too much about it.
Yeah.
Although it didn't really seem to me any of the stuff that they talked about needed to be under NDA.
I agree 100%. All that stuff was like general knowledge, or it was like, here are some little tips.
Yeah.
Like, and it was very generic. There was hardly any real specific information about AWS or RDS in any specific manner.
Yeah.
Which I thought was strange. There was maybe one talk where the guy talked a little bit about how some of the database design works. And even then, it was like, I'm sure you could find the same thing in a blog post somewhere.
Well, I suppose that maybe the NDA wasn't so much for the talks that they were giving, but rather the types of conversations you'd have after. And then, did you go on a tour?
Yes, I did. Place?
And what did you think?
It was awesome, man. It was cool.
So do you see what I meant when we went to Microsoft and I said, oh, wow, this kind of looks like Amazon's office?
Yeah.
I think they have a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Tighter security at Amazon, for sure.
Yeah, a little bit.
There's everyone got a ID card to get around.
Yeah.
And when you actually went up to the top floor, you had to swipe through this carousel thing to get in. Everyone had to go in individually and swipe their card, which was interesting.
Yeah, I think, if you put it into the right perspective, I'm not sure, but what percent of the world's internet is on Amazon?
Yeah, it's probably a lot.
It's probably a lot. And I think when you have that much, you have to have some sort of security, right?
Well, I mean, I guess. And especially with the database stuff, right? Because, although they don't really have, the databases are sometimes encrypted depending on what database you choose or, how you save your data. It could be encrypted. But
I think a lot of the time that would be up to the user, right? Not actually.
I think Aurora offers encryption as a checkbox when you create one.
Right.
So that's, I'm not sure how it works.
But it's still probably up to the user when you're setting it up.
So
whether you're,
I guess
whether
if you're, you're a, data or if not. You're a, someone who's not necessarily very safe with your data, you could have data out there that, you know, maybe something happens, there's a breach or leak of some kind.
I don't know if that's happened. I guess it must have. What about something like LinkedIn the past a couple of weeks or a month ago?
Oh, yeah.
There was it wasn't like they got hacked suddenly again. It happened back in 2011 or 2012.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then about a month ago, people were talking about it again. We found it was a higher number. Do you know what their infrastructure is like? Do they have their own?
I have no idea. I do know that, or I heard this through the grapevine, that Mark Zuckerberg actually got hacked because of that. So he had the similar password on his LinkedIn as he did on his Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't use Twitter. He hasn't for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. But it's funny just to see him tweeting I've been hacked and this is who did it. Yeah, you can. It's funny. Apparently his password was da, da, da or something like D-A-D-A-D-A. It's man. That's your password? But yeah. But yeah, I didn't, I don't know. I'm not really sure. I know they're heavy into Node, I think, on a bunch of stuff. But
oh, is that right?
I'm guessing that they're probably using a bunch of database stuff. I don't know if you know any more about that, but
no, I don't know. I've been under the impression that they use more enterprise-y type languages like Java.
Oh, yeah?
But I'm not exactly sure. Yeah.
I know maybe 5 years ago they switched some of their stuff, or maybe not, that's probably too long. Maybe 3 years ago they switched a bunch of stuff to Node and they were talking about how great the change was in terms of performance.
Are you talking particularly for the RDS team or for a different?
Oh, it's for LinkedIn. For LinkedIn.
Oh, for LinkedIn.
Yeah. For LinkedIn, they changed a bunch of stuff to Node, and they were saying, "Oh, we saved this much money.
Well,
we
think,
got rid of 7 servers or something like that."
Didn't Kafka come from LinkedIn?
And
that's Scala. So I wonder if they're using Scala or on the JVM.
Another big person that does stuff like that is Netflix. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that they're in there too, because I know they release a lot of Scala stuff as well, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're on the JVM and on Amazon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Are they still? Or was there
I don't know if we talked about this before, but I think the only person I've ever seen move off of Amazon is Dropbox. Mm-hmm. But like they were doing it not necessarily because of quality, they were doing it because cost.
Yeah, yeah.
For them to actually move off actually save them money. Because they're such huge users.
Right. And that was a pretty interesting past week that we had.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at the upcoming week. So we got Monday. We've got the Git and Zero Tech happening at Decentral Vancouver. That's 436 West Pender from 4 till 6.
Yep.
I was thinking I'm going to go there and then maybe talk about some different provisioning tools and like Ansible and stuff. But I realized I'm not, because I'm actually going to be busy planning something else.
The next event.
Well, not the next event, which is Generate, which is at 412-289 Alexander Street from 7 p.m. And this might be kind of interesting. Have you been out to any of the Generate Technology Group events?
No, I don't think so.
I haven't either. No particular reason why not. I guess it just, the time hasn't aligned, but this looks like it should be pretty fun. Over at Goran Alexander, and it says building and launching the world's first totally AI predictive interface. Sounds pretty interesting. I'd definitely like to go and check that out, but I'll be getting ready for Hackernest, the Vancouver Hackernest Tech Social, which is happening on Monday. It's going to be at Skio Music. So we actually had Skio. We hosted at Skio a couple months ago, and that was awesome. I think we had somebody who had planned a meetup, and then the space wasn't big enough or something, so we needed an extra space. And we said, you know, we reached out to a couple of people that we had, and Skio was like, sure, we'd love to host, but we also want to host in June. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. And they have such a really, such an awesome space, and it's a really cool crew there. So that should be a lot of fun. We also have some really interesting sponsors this time as well. We have SAP sponsoring again. Now, they had such good success. I guess last time they sponsored a couple, and they came out, and they hired a couple of people as a result of that.
Oh, that's awesome.
So they were really, really excited and really happy to be on board again. So if you're interested in that, in, you know, SAP, they're definitely hiring. Yeah. Also Branch Metrics. So they're going to be out there, and I think they're both going to be having like a little bit of a table setup.
Okay, cool.
So make sure to talk to them. I think Branch is also going to be doing some sort of raffle. So I haven't heard all the details about it, but you'll definitely find out.
You'll have to go to find out. Yeah.
Now, Hackernest has changed its model a little bit. So it used to be, you know, donations, suggested donations, but now it's actually entry by donation.
Okay.
So make sure that you're aware of that.
And that's entry by donation. So there's not necessarily a value set on that.
There's a like a recommended of $10.
Cool.
But it's kind of up to you.
Yeah. Just watch out for Selena, she'll get you.
All right, and now that's our Monday, so it should be a pretty fun Monday. Then we got Tuesday the 28th, we have BrainStation Vancouver. They have a lunch and learn, and this looks pretty interesting. What's the deal with this lunch and learn, James?
So it's a lunch and learn from Lindsay Musil from Eastside Games. Nice. So they're actually going to be talking about, I guess she's the in charge of the talent acquisition there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually talking about their actual studio, how they sort of make their culture, what they do to generate that type of environment that people want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it seems like everyone these days is like, look at our cool office, look at our cool staff, look at our cool boss, look at our cool benefits, look at our cool schedule.
Yeah.
It gets really competitive, and, you know, trying to compete with those people on a culture level is really difficult. So I'm sure you get some insight into that as well.
It's actually becoming really, I think, in my opinion, really exciting. It's a really exciting time to be in development right now.
Yeah.
And you see companies like, you know, Unbounce, they have that dedicated event space.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a chance to go to a company this week, actually, and talk about an upcoming Hackernest. So we'll see something happening there. But they've got some really cool space. They got three floors. The second and third floor are like developer space, and the first floor, it's like this really nice floor. They've got a dedicated barista for to make coffee for the crew.
Yeah,
They've got beer on tap. They've got something I haven't seen other places as well, which I thought was really, really good, especially for these days people in tech really like bicycling. They have bicycle rooms beside the shower rooms, so you can actually ride your bike into work, put it in the bike room, you know, it's in a secure place.
That's nice.
And then you can have a shower because you might be sweaty.
I think that's key. The shower is amazing, because you can, like, people like go to the gym before work, or they run to work or something like that.
Yeah.
Or they maybe do a little bike ride after work and come back, mm-hmm. stuff like that. That's awesome.
It's a really cool space. And so I haven't actually put it up on the meetup yet. So this is kind of an Easter egg for you to find sometime. Ooh. I think we're actually going to host our Hacker Nest there in September, right when they finish their office.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. That's sweet. All right.
And then we have, so Tuesday in the evening, we have at 6 p.m. Van Tug, so the Vancouver Technology User Group. This is over at Build Direct, which is 401 West Georgia. It's on the 22nd floor. So that's the top floor up there. Nice. Really nice place. Make sure to go check that out if you're around. And that's from 6. And that's going to be talking about, the title is Social Media for Geeks or Social Tune-Up. Should be a lot of fun.
Cool. And then we have the Vancouver Amazon meetup with the Fast and Simple BI with Amazon QuickSight.
Is it the Vancouver Amazon meetup or the Amazon Web Services User Group?
Well, it's the Vancouver Amazon Web Services User Group. That's the full title. I was truncating it a little bit there.
Well, there are a couple. The reason I point that out is because there is there's like Amazon Cloud Users Group, which is a separate one. Right. And I think that's part of the one of the ones that Matt runs, and I don't believe
Good point. Yeah. So this is the other group, the Web Services User Group, and the title of this meetup is Fast and Simple BI with Amazon QuickSight. I don't even think I know what BI is.
Business intelligence.
Oh, okay.
So when I was over, when I was with Mogo, we had a whole BI group. I think there were about 5 or 6 people in it. And I'm not exactly sure what they do, but I think it's somewhat in line with analytics, but more the business end of that, like which way should the business be aligned to make use of these analytics?
Or, so if you're not careful, you might think this was at Amazon, but it's actually at Unbounce.
Yeah. So this might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's they're talking about Amazon, and the meetup is not necessarily an Amazon meetup by Amazon. It's people who are using Amazon services.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. There's Lewis Wong is going to be speaking, and it says that he is the principal product manager at AWS for Amazon QuickSight. So, I mean, if somebody knows there's about this stuff, he probably knows.
Yeah, definitely. So he's talking about S3 as well, so that's pretty cool.
Nice. And then over at Rise, so Rise HQ, 12th floor, I guess, of the Guinness building. That's 1055 West Hastings from 6 p.m. This is a $12 event. It is the Tech Vancouver meetup. Didn't that used to be 10?
Maybe they
added tax to it. I don't know.
I've been to this a bunch of times, and it's always a good time. The nice thing about this one is they have a nice split of like networking and chatting and just having a good time up front with pizza and beer. Mm-hmm. And then the second half is there's four presentations this time. Sometimes there's more, sometimes there's less.
Nice.
But you get to see Daniel Ebhard from Coho, John Chan from Dayboard, Yasara Najat from OpenSpace, and Ian McKinnon from Later. So a bunch of cool speakers. And it's also sponsored by the BC Innovation Council. So that's pretty cool.
Nice. Oh, so that's $12 in advance or $20 at the door.
Yeah.
So make sure to get your tickets in advance if you want to get that savings. And then we've got the Red Academy has something. This is the second floor, 1490 West Broadway. Is that the whole second floor of that building?
Yes. Yeah, nice. Whole second floor. They also have the third floor, too.
They also have the whole third floor?
They expanded to the third floor a couple months ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah, they have the whole
top.
It's
quite a lot of space.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, it's interesting they don't seem to have any sort of signage outside. I don't know if that building has some, like, a special rule that everything has to look a certain way.
It's a historic building, so you might be right.
So it looks like the Blends Cafe has, like, a blue tarp, and so does the McDonald's beside it. Mm. So I noticed, like, the signage is, I think it's blue with white lettering.
Yeah.
And maybe that's their rule.
Maybe. Yeah, I know that, with signage on buildings, there's, like, tax stuff. It's all the wonky and all that stuff. But, there's always a sign out front of the building to find the door, because it is on the... like Broadway Street. Side, it's not anywhere else.
Just to the left of Blends. Really.
Exactly.
So that's at 6. And what's this about?
So this is called Pitch Perfect. So I thought this one was interesting because
I saw it and I thought it was a singing group.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah, I thought so too. I'm like, oh, we're going to watch Pitch Perfect, the movie.
Yeah.
But no, it's actually about your first pitch. Mm. And I thought this was interesting as not just maybe someone that's talking about maybe pitching a business, but also pitching an idea. Mm. So I think that when you are a good public speaker, you can talk about anything with even people that are just, you know, three people in your team.
Yeah.
If you can communicate well, then you can talk about anything.
Yeah, I guess that's a pretty good idea. And I think perfecting a pitch as well, like if you do have a business or you do have an idea and you're trying to say it to somebody, the more that you practice that, you know, the better it's going to be. And so that sounds like a pretty interesting meetup to go to.
Yeah.
All right. And then we have Closure Hack Night at 6 p.m. Make sure to bring a laptop to that one. Mm-hmm. I think so far that's the only one that we would have to bring a laptop to.
I think so. And that's at Code Core.
And that's over at Code Core, 142 West Hastings at 6 p.m. Then we have Van Dev over at UBC Robson Square. It's the conference room 550, I think, from 6:45 to 9:30. Do you know what the talk's about this time?
Well, the title is, it looks like it's code, but it looks like an infinite for loop calling the automate function passing the everything variable. Hmm. So I don't know how to say that in a nice, succinct way, but it's about...
Automate everything.
Automate everything. Yes, exactly. Nice. So with CI, CD, and they're actually talking about C# and Visual Studio as well.
Oh, this sounds really cool. So Cliff will be presenting his custom solution for automating build setup, CI, and CD.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that should be a really awesome meetup to go to. And also, you wouldn't need your laptop for that because it's going to be more of a talk.
Yeah.
But if you do have one, if you wanted to take some notes or you know, chat with your friends on Facebook, you could definitely do that. Then we have Van Bug. So this is actually, this is from 7 p.m. Over at SFU Harbor Center, 515 West Hastings Street. Mm-hmm. This would be a perfect time to hop on board if you're interested. It doesn't say much on the meetup itself, but what this is, is the Vancouver BSD users group. And so basically we got set up, and so I guess maybe I should clarify, I'm a member of this group, and there's about six people that we went in and we bought the BSD certification for associate certification.
Oh yeah, I remember you talking
material.
About this before.
And so this is a study group.
Yeah.
It's going to meet once every couple of weeks and go through the material. And it's really neat. Like I don't know how familiar you are with like BSD.
Not very familiar.
Okay,
at all.
And that was like yeah. that was kind of where yeah. I was at. And the more that I look at it, the more I'm like, oh wow, okay, now I see how like Linux has its roots in BSD or Unix. And oh wow, I'm using a Mac. Oh, I see that's where these commands came from. That's how this stuff is. It's actually like a very familiar looking sort of environment. And so we're looking at four different types of BSD. There's like Dragonfly, NetBSD, OpenBSD, and FreeBSD.
Yeah.
And so this is actually really interesting. So it's a fairly deep dive. I mean, it's associate's certificate or whatever. So it's kind of like, I guess, sysadmin 101 type
stuff.
So
the goal of this is to actually to get everyone that joins the meetup as it happens to actually get that certification, right?
So I don't think this was the original goal of the meetup,
right.
But right now and for the next couple of months, that's what we're working on.
Cool.
So, yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. And I think it's definitely worthwhile, going out to and just, you know, knowing the system that you develop on a little better.
Yeah.
Is fun times.
Yeah. A lot of people look at those, like they hold those certifications in high value, any kind of certification. It means you took the time to become an expert in whatever you're talking about.
That's kind of true. Yeah. And for me, I wasn't so much interested in the certification. Like when I went to college, I actually went through, there was like a distance, most of it was presented online.
Mm-hmm.
We actually went and physically wrote our tests on campus, but I didn't attend any classes. It was all kind of working on my own. And so I felt like I really missed out on a lot of the conversations you might have.
Right.
And I mean, of course we had that, you know, when we did our exams and we got to meet each other and talk with each other, but I feel like with this group, it's a lot of that. It's that community studying something together where you get to talk to each other. And I find that really, I like that.
It's almost like having a class, going to class. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But like going to class where everyone is leading.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
But there is actually the person, Shawl, who is leading it, does an excellent job.
All right. And now we got Wednesday coming up.
Yeah. So Wednesday the 29th, we have the Linux desktop. And that's over at Decentral, 436 West Pender, from 4 to 6. If you run Linux, if you're interested in running Linux, if you want to trash talk Linux, this would be the meetup to go to.
Yeah.
And then you can see, you know, get some rebuttals. Why is Linux good?
If you have that messed up Windows UEFI problem that
is
plaguing everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or you want to dual boot, or you want to get Linux going on your Mac, or anything.
Cool.
Yeah.
This one's cool. The YVR testing meetup has a presentation at Hewlett-Packard, or sorry, the Sophos office by Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah. So this should be kind of interesting. I'm not sure. Who is it that's giving the talk?
Lindsay Byblow.
Oh, interesting. That's pretty cool. So Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, I think they're the ones who bought ActiveState.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah. So yeah. They have some pretty interesting things to say. That looks like it'll be an awesome meetup. I'd really like to hear this. The pitfalls of agile development in testing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Nice. And then the Pluralsight Study Group over at PNI Digital Media Offices, 100 425 Carroll Street. So from 5:30 to 6:30. Make sure to bring a laptop to that. Mm-hmm. And what are they studying this week?
WebGL and 3JS Fundamentals.
Nice. That should be pretty fun. So I think they've actually been doing this for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So if you are interested in going to that, you might want to reach out to them and see how far along they are. I haven't been to any of these meetups. I don't know if you have, James. But
No, not yet.
I gather that they're using the Pluralsight study site,
yeah,
and going over different courses there. So you might want to make sure to catch up if you want to be a part of that group.
Cool.
Then we have Thursday. So Thursday we have the DDD CQRS ES practitioners over at Decentral from 4:30 to 7. Make sure to make it out to that. You don't necessarily need to bring a laptop to that, although it'll probably come in handy during the latter section where you might actually break out and do some coding.
Yeah.
But typically this one starts out with a little bit of a fireside chat, talking a little bit about, you know, DDD, CQRS, or ES, and sometimes maybe all of them.
One cool thing that I saw was that there was one guy who came, it was his first time, mm-hmm. and actually everyone helped him walk through some of the events that might happen in his application, which is pretty sweet. So if you're interested in how that might apply to you, you can literally get an example of, here's my business, here's what I'm trying to make.
That's something that I've definitely used it for. I really like it, and the format is, it starts out with a fireside chat, and you get to kind of get an introduction into a really interesting idea and learn from some kind of senior level experience, quite senior level. I mean, usually it's Robert Repple giving the talk, and he's a fairly senior level systems architect, sure. I guess. And then there's usually a event storming session, and that could be exactly that. Like, you can, if you have your own idea and you're working on something, you're like, I really want to event storm this. Mm-hmm. You can either use that with the group and the group will help you with it, or you can even break off and have like your own private, ES session, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that session, people like to kind of, try and bang out a solution as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool.
Then the Learn Data Science, also happening Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Over at CBRE. What's that?
Yeah, CBRE, I think, is a banking thing.
Interesting. Okay. But this should be pretty awesome. Have you been to any of these, the Learn Data Science?
No. Oh, no. They're real estate. That's who CBRE is, real estate.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The subtitle for this one is Predicting Hourly Rainfall.
Neat. Yeah, so that should be pretty fun. Is this, this is a Kaggle competition.
Yeah. So it looks like they're actually going to go through this competition that's called How Much Did It Rain 2? Nice, How much did it rain 2?
Awesome. So yeah. That sounds pretty relevant for Vancouver.
Yeah, exactly.
Then Startup Drinks from 6 p.m. And that goes fairly late. This is over at 131 Water Kitchen and Bar. On 131 Water Street.
Yep.
So if you don't quite make it out at 6 because you went to one of the other meetups, usually people tend to come and go in waves.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there's no real limit, but you might show up at 10:30 and people might not be there.
Yeah, I've been there as late as 10, but it was like me and maybe 3 or 4 other people.
Yeah, so. I think I went by the one time that I did go. I think I went around 9 or 9:30, and there was, I think there were only 2 people when I got there, but then like 5 or 6 people showed up and left later. So it was kind of, I was there for about a half hour.
When I first moved here, this is one of the first events that I went to because I used to go to it back in London, Ontario, where I was living for the last few years. And it's awesome. It's great. Everyone's super friendly.
Yeah.
You can chat about whatever. It doesn't have to be a startup. Mm-hmm. You can talk about anything that you're doing, you know, stuff like that. Just getting a feel for the community. It's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, and then we've got from 6:30 to 9:30, we've got Ladies That UX Vancouver over at 433 West Pender. Why does that sound so familiar to me?
Jaeger's Downtown.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Okay. interesting. So in the back room there, and this is Intro to Games User Research.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So the presenter is Dr. Serena Hillman. Mm-hmm. So she's a game researcher at EA in Burnaby.
Nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. And then we've got this oddball out here. You want to tell us about it, James?
Yeah, I think this is an oddball. It's called Sharing Economy YVR, a panel discussion on the sharing economy. So for people that don't know, the sharing economy in Vancouver was off to a little bit of a bumpy start with Uber, at least, with ride sharing. Mm-hmm. And I guess people want to talk about that. It's interesting, actually, there's a panel here that actually talks about the issue. Mm-hmm. And there's experts from Flatbook, Modo, and ShareShed,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of cool. So there's a little bit of networking at the beginning, and then the panel discussion starts at 7, and it's about an hour and a half of panel discussion, so that's pretty cool. And then they have a QA session at the end.
All right, and that's over at Brain Station, mm-hmm. 1110 Hamilton. I wouldn't bring a laptop to that.
Yeah.
It should be fun, from 7 to 8:30 on Thursday.
Yeah.
And it looks like that kind of rounds out our meetups for the week. All right, and we're here with our special guest, Chris Richardson.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me. I'm a software development manager on the RDS Oracle team at Amazon Vancouver.
Awesome, and thank you very much for being on our show, Chris. So we had a pretty interesting event that you put on Thursday. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, on Thursday, we hosted RDS Tech Talks at Amazon Vancouver. It was a community event. We invited a bunch of local engineers to come in and listen to a few talks by a few of our principal engineers and a few local software development engineers in Vancouver. It was only the second time that Amazon Vancouver has hosted an event like that. Mm-hmm. And the turnout was pretty good. There was a lot of enthusiastic people there who asked a lot of great questions and wanted a tour after.
Yeah, I'd like to say a lot of elite people were there because Drew and I were there. So, you know, it makes us feel really special.
Top of the top, right?
Top of the top, exactly.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty fun. What was kind of behind the presentations? What was the motivation?
The motivation was that a lot of people don't know that Amazon Vancouver is here and quite big, especially for RDS. We have 40% of our development team in Vancouver, and then the rest are around the world, like Sydney, Dublin, Palo Alto, Boston, and a big chunk in Seattle. And so, you know, we wanted to invite the community in to let everyone know that we're here and talk about some of the cool stuff we're doing.
Yeah, I was actually surprised at how much space there was. I didn't know as well until you showed me, I guess, a month or two ago. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, I don't know if you boast among your friends or anything, but I think you're actually pretty close to a balcony in your area, right? Like you can actually walk out, you have a big deck.
Yeah, we have, well, if you look at the Telus Garden, there's a little block sticking out, and the top of one of those blocks is on the 17th floor, so we have a little roof deck. Yeah. Which is very nice in the summer.
And
we eat lunch out there, have a beer or two on Friday after work.
Nice. Now, I don't know if I'm allowed to ask this, but do you have a barbecue out there?
We do not have a barbecue out there.
Any plans, or is that allowed?
It is very highly desired, mm-hmm. and it's something that we're working on.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe just get one of those propane torches, and kind of that might be the good substitute.
I'm not sure that would fly, but
give it a shot. Yeah, it's a really nice office. I took my tour on Thursday, and it was awesome. I couldn't believe like how much cool stuff there was going on. I'm not sure how much you can talk. It seemed like security was a bit of a thing there.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon, we do a lot of really cool stuff. We're always innovating for our customers, and so. You know, sometimes there's security concerns because people might have written something on the board that is a feature that might be announced at reInvent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's some caution there.
So reInvent's coming up, when is that, end of December or end of November?
End of November in Las Vegas, yeah.
I was looking at that. I was kind of trying to justify whether I could go or not. It looks really awesome. And I found, first class tickets for two, mm-hmm. return, are like $600.
Oh,
with Vegas the discount code.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, Vegas is highly traveled, so you kind of, the planes are there all the time.
But I mean, the difference between first class and economy is like $200.
Oh, nice.
I think it's probably not that long of a flight, but still, that would be a great time to splurge, right?
Yeah.
ReInvent is pretty cool. I didn't go last year. Uh-huh. It's really customer focused. We launch a lot of features there. There's also a lot of kind of like hands-on seminars on how to use the new features and services.
It looks like there's a lot of training and workshops and things like that as well. And we at work, we've been using a lot of AWS and different features and things like that as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure what's coming and what's going to be announced there, but I can bet there will be some pretty exciting things.
There will be some cool things. Mm-hmm. We're up to 70 services in the console now. Mm-hmm. And so one of the challenges we're seeing with users is that they want to use all these cool services but don't necessarily know how they fit together. So we have a strong support community, support engineers, technical account managers, and solutions architects that actually work with customers to help them use the cloud.
One of the things that I'm kind of looking for, and I don't know if it'll be announced, and I know you probably don't know either, but even if you did, you wouldn't be able to say, would be some sort of like a Docker alternative from AWS. And I'm kind of guessing that maybe that'll be something that we'll see in reInvent this year. But
so you should come to reInvent then.
I really want to go. So can you hook me up with some tickets? So what I'd like to ask you about, actually, before we talk about your current position and role as manager on your engineering team, let's go back a little bit to how you came to be, I guess, where you are today. So you grew up in Langley.
I grew up in Langley, yeah.
Pretty exciting town.
Went to high school there. Yeah, it's great if you like horses and the outdoors. Mm-hmm. It was a great place to grow up, and I can't complain.
But, actually, I spent a summer on one of my family friend's ranch. Not ranch, farm, I guess.
Yeah, there. Ranch makes it sound like the president.
Well,
yeah.
it was a pretty big area. It had horses cows and whatever. Yeah. And it was really fun. I mean, just like meeting some of the other kids in the next house, like 3 miles down the road, like riding our bikes and jumping on trampolines and catching frogs.
Lots of good trails out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely some fun stuff. So as you grew up, were you always interested in computers?
Yeah, I was always pretty interested in computers. I had a computer from probably the age of maybe 7 or 8. Always took like science, technology, math stuff in school. And when, you know, it came time to decide, you know, what I wanted to study, electrical engineering popped up at SFU. And so I went for it.
That sounds pretty cool. So what attracted you to electrical engineering?
Just my interest in computers, to be honest. I didn't probably know enough about it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as I went through the program, I realized I liked software engineering quite a bit more and computer science. So I chose the computers option there, and I took some extra computer science courses. And then I never worked in electrical engineering at all, and I just jumped straight into software.
So, cool. So what kind of stuff would you do in electrical engineering? I guess making electronics, or is this focused on like logic gates and?
Yeah, a lot of the people that I went to school with work for like Intel or Broadcom or Cisco, and they're making, you know, hardware devices.
Right.
For me, I didn't enjoy hardware engineering because it was a really slow feedback loop, and you couldn't really see what you were doing. You could design a circuit board, send it away to get printed, get it back, and it wouldn't work, and you would have no idea why. You just would do it again. Whereas software engineering has a really quick feedback loop, and I really love that.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point. I wonder if that's why it seems to me anyway. I wonder if it's that feedback loop and the speed of it that makes software developing more interesting. Or you know, I mean, there's always bugs, right? But it seems less buggy somehow to me than a lot of our hardware interfaces.
Yeah, that was the case for me. Usually when you screw up and, you know, when you're programming, the whatever tools you're using tells you pretty quickly and you can fix it. And that's really satisfying. You have this kind of continuous improvement to your project, you know, write something, test it, see it work.
Right.
That feedback loop was pretty rewarding for me.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense. So you did, how long were you in electrical engineering before you switched over to CompSci?
Oh, I finished my electrical engineering degree.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I was, I got the Canadian pinky ring that signifies that I'm an
the
engineer.
Bolt or whatever it is.
Yeah. That was just pure stubbornness. It's like, I started this. I'm deep. I'm finishing it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I just did extra computer science stuff.
I don't know if it still does, but I remember hearing, I guess when I was in college, that electronic and electrical engineering seemed to have like some of the highest dropout rates.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I think in high school, electrical engineering isn't really well explained. And then when you get there and you find that it's a very focused discipline.
Right.
And there's a lot of math and a lot of physics. And kind of, you know, what drew me away was the lack of that immediate feedback loop. So, and it was also quite difficult as well.
Right.
So people would come in, see what it was, you know, be used to getting really good grades in high school, and then all of a sudden, you know, struggle and then look elsewhere.
Do you, are you excited about any of the IoT stuff that comes out as far as like maybe tinkering with that again, or is that sort of in the past?
I'm excited about it. I read about it, but I got kids now and I got a busy job and I'm pretty focused there.
Yeah.
All right. So, so you finished in electrical engineering.
Yep.
And what was your first step after, university?
So during university, I started working at a window company, building like software to automate their inventory processes. So that was like the hook for me. I was they just kind of let me build this on my own, which was really cool for me. Probably not the best idea for them to hire an inexperienced person to do this.
Right.
But yeah, and I worked there for a year during my last year of school.
So was that some sort of co-op or was it just?
Yeah, it was a co-op internship.
Nice.
And then I did another co-op at a startup called Echo Communications. I was trying to figure it out, you know, I knew this is how I would launch my career. And then I was immediately drawn to the startup culture. And so we were building like a mobile messaging platform. So yeah, I did voice over IP calling, like text message over IP, stuff like that. And it was pretty ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
This was before smartphones were ubiquitous or even popular. So right. on a Nokia phone, that was, you know, a little one of those little bricks.
Oh, yeah.
It ran on there, and it was pretty tough to use, and I would say it was ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, working out of a startup was great because you get to wear so many hats. You get challenged in a lot of ways.
Right. Let's actually go back to that window company because now I'm really curious. So you were given kind of, I guess, just free reign to do anything. What were some of the tools? Oh, maybe not free reign.
I wouldn't say free reign to do anything. Like they knew what they wanted, but mm-hmm. I was, you know.
Did they know what they wanted autonomy. As far as technology choices or
No.
So what were your go-to tools?
I worked with my boss to decide that. Yeah. So we had, Windows Mobile Pocket PC handheld scanners,
mm-hmm.
and we had a bunch of locations in the warehouse, and so you would scan the location and you would scan the giant piece of aluminum,
mm-hmm.
and that was the point of the system, to track all of these pieces of aluminum, mm-hmm. so they could keep their inventory down and cost down and kind of do just-in-time production.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a embedded C++ mm-hmm. application, and then we had like a PHP web server, and then that hooked into Crystal Reports, which is what the people would actually use.
Cool. Well, that's really interesting. Yeah. And that's Crystal mm-hmm. Reports. I think they're originally from Vancouver. Is that right? And now that's the SAP.
Yeah, they got bought by Business Objects, who I think maybe got bought by someone else.
That's SAP. Pretty cool.
Interesting. Yeah. So that sounds like a really an interesting stack that you were working with, mm-hmm. And somewhat low level, I guess. So embedded C, you're saying?
C++? Yeah, embedded C++.
Yeah.
And PHP and MySQL.
Mm. Nice. And then you went over to
Echo Communications, yeah.
Oh, okay. And what was the stack like there?
There I started on embedded C++ yeah. as well, doing, I guess, the mobile app for the initial voice over IP prototype. And then I moved into kind of doing the provisioning system.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on the type of phone, packaging up the software and sending it to you, like mm-hmm. sending a text message to download.
Right.
And that I wrote mostly in Perl.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Cool.
And when I was there, I got really involved in like product and program management, as well as like customer outreach,
right?
Which was really fun for me.
What are some of the differences between, I guess, like working on the code and designing solutions to problems versus the management side?
There's a big lack of control. You really need to let go, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need to set goals
mm-hmm.
and talk about what you want the product to look like and communicate that effectively and get feedback from developers.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to step back and stop trying to be in the critical path, messing with what the engineers are doing. That experience pretty much launched me into the management path.
Oh, okay. So from there, you moved on, and have you been in some form of management since? Or
yeah, pretty much all of my roles have blended. Mm-hmm. Some management with technology. So I went to another startup called Taga Media, which is still operating in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
That was 8 years ago. It came out of Invoke Labs.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, that's where I work.
Yeah. And Ryan Holmes actually interviewed me.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, he's started Hootsuite and many other companies.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. And so that was super small. I think I was the second technical person on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So it was similar to the early days of Echo. It was just like, you guys go build this. And that was really fun. And there was no, I guess, I wouldn't say no, there wasn't a lot of structure there.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working in like a technical project manager kind of role there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, that escalated the management path aspect of my career.
Right. So that's kind of interesting. I guess you said Ryan Holmes interviewed you there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little while later, you ended up joining the Hootsuite team.
Yeah. Fast forward 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'd done some other stuff. But yeah, I lived in London for a while, and then I moved back to Vancouver.
London, Ontario? Or
London, UK.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had to ask because James earlier
yeah.
Mentioned that he had lived in London, Ontario before yeah. coming to Vancouver.
So. Yeah, no, it was the UK. Uh-huh. And yeah, I was looking for something exciting to do, still kind of interested in startups, and Hootsuite was still mm-hmm. on the smaller side at that time. And then I went there, and that was great. Really accelerated my learning.
Mm-hmm. So where were they located at the time?
They'd just moved into the what they call HQ1 mm-hmm. at 8th and Ontario.
Okay, nice. What's the kind of bouncing around a bit here, but what's the tech scene like in England, in the UK? I don't know what it's going to be like now, but
it's huge, right? Because London's kind of a financial center of the world, so pretty much every major tech company has an office there as kind of their European headquarters.
Makes sense,
so I was surprised; I didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. It operates very differently there. It's very recruiter driven. Mm-hmm. So I got there, I'm like, I wonder how I get a job, and I signed up for some recruitment sites, and then all of a sudden, like, my phone wouldn't stop ringing for a day. Like, I thought that wasn't. I didn't know that was a thing. People say their phone doesn't stop ringing, but I actually experienced that one time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That one time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's tons of opportunity there. Tons of startups. There's what they call Silicon Roundabout, where that's where their startup scene is centralized.
Silicon Roundabout.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a very European name.
Yeah, it's very British.
Very British, yeah.
It's an old street roundabout. It's huge.
Oh, yeah?
That's cool. It's the size of a football field. And then just all around, that's where all the tech companies are.
Nice. Oh, cool. So that would definitely be a place to go and visit, I think. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get to fast forward to your current role on Amazon. What did you see in Amazon? What attracted you to this position? How did that come about?
Yeah, I had a friend there, and he presented me with an opportunity. To me, like, Amazon Web Services is something I've used since 2008 at every job and haven't stopped. Right. So, it was, I thought it was really cool to work on something that I've used and then to work on something that empowers the developer community.
Right.
And then, I started looking into, like, the leadership principles and, you know, the vision of Amazon and the customer focus, and that really attracted me there.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. I hadn't realized before, and I think might be a really interesting way of trying to solve a really hard problem, is something that I got brought up on Thursday, which was, I'd heard of the two pizza team or whatever. But I didn't put the two and two together and realize that's actually like an Amazon principle.
Yeah. It's a rule.
Yeah. So anyway, getting back to what I was saying was, like, keeping the team small, right, is a way to preserve culture.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I've experienced teams getting big and then challenges arise with communication and specifically, like, a lack of autonomy and ownership, right?
Right.
At Amazon, if your team gets too big, you divide. You know, one team owns something and they have complete autonomy, right? Amazon's so big now that without this model, it would just explode because there's so much complexity. So an individual team needs to have very clear ownership and be completely trusted to, you know, accomplish their goals, satisfy their customers.
So how big would a team be?
It really depends, but it's usually less than 10 people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's really interesting. And I guess, I don't know if it's obvious that when teams start growing, they say, like, wow, we really need to start finding the seams here and start to separate. And how does that work? I guess if you have so many smaller teams, there must be a lot of managers.
Yeah, there are a lot of managers and there's a lot of engineers. I think, 5 to 10 engineers per manager is probably the sweet spot there. Mm-hmm. But usually the decision to split comes from a team getting big and those challenges starting to arise, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much going on. It's communication gets more difficult. It's unclear who owns what. That's when you need to divide the teams in half and they each take a piece.
So I guess it's pretty team dependent, but how often would a team split?
Really depends. Yeah. Completely team dependent.
Yeah.
Are there any teams that really haven't split in a long time, or are there some that are splitting all the time?
Any team that's growing really quickly is going to split fairly quickly. I don't have complete visibility across Amazon. It's so big. I'm pretty, like, isolated to my floor of Amazon Vancouver.
Sure. Right.
And then, you know, the Seattle office that I visit for RDS as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we split as necessary.
So let's have a look at the RDS team for a bit. So RDS, there are a number of teams in RDS as well.
Yeah, there's quite a few teams in RDS.
Right. So, and your particular team is the RDS Oracle.
Yep.
Is there only one team on RDS Oracle?
No, we have two RDS Oracle teams because we got too big and we split. And so we each have a very clear, specific goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough. That's interesting. So it seems like it is somewhat goal-oriented then.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So how big is your team?
It's less than 10 people right now.
Less than 10 people. Mm-hmm. So does, I guess they don't eat a lot if two pizzas will feed them.
Yeah, I mean, it depends.
Two slices each, pretty much. Yes, yeah, maybe someone has to eat an extra slice. That's all right.
So within a team of that size, we're not all working on the same project. We'll divide into specific projects. Mm-hmm. So then, the clear autonomy and ownership lines are reinforced again.
Yeah, okay. So that's pretty interesting. And then now another thing that was brought up during that meeting that I thought was interesting was, a strong desire to have entrepreneurial spirit and to really encourage people to, when they see a problem or when they see something that could be improved, to come up with a solution and to champion that.
Yeah.
And that seemed pretty interesting. And I could see teams being built based on those types of ideas if there's something that might have some traction. Does that happen fairly often? Or
yeah, it happens fairly often. Mm-hmm. It's even built into kind of the planning process. Mm-hmm. But yeah, most of the most successful products at Amazon and at Amazon Web Services were one person's idea. Mm-hmm. And they wrote you heard about it, the PR FAQ. Mm-hmm. But before you start a new product, you write the press release and the FAQ. And then you try to see if this matches customer need, right? So it's always customer focused. We have this customer need. We're going to write this press release. And then, you build some support and then you start a team and you build that.
So that's how RDS started, right? It was one guy's idea and it built into this massive thing that's now super successful.
And that's how pretty much every Amazon Web Service came to be.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. All right. So what about you? Do you have any ideas?
So actually, we're going through a big planning phase right now, and part of it is, what are your big crazy ideas that are almost unreasonable, right?
Right.
What would our customers love to see that would really stretch us and push us on their behalf, right?
Yeah,
and that's something that we review regularly.
So that actually brings up a question: how much time would be allotted for exploratory programming, for example? I've got this idea, I want to flesh it out. I guess it kind of comes down to resources, team management, idea, whatever.
But I don't think there's a rule there. Mm-hmm. But if we see, so our roadmap is customer driven, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we see a big opportunity, engineers would be given the time to explore that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you run into challenges that you can't face or it doesn't make sense to tackle right now.
Right.
But the runway is variable.
Yeah.
But it's all about customer focus.
It's kind of crazy seeing that Amazon is almost every one of the services in AWS was one person's idea and they championed that to something huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that other companies don't do that because you can see Amazon's had all these different successes and other companies kind of get back to work and work on the thing that we're already doing and don't bother innovating in other ways
on the company.
Yeah. But it's strange that it isn't more popular, that mindset. Mm-hmm. But I guess maybe it is becoming more popular as Amazon shows that it actually is viable as a business model.
Yeah, I mean, it's why Amazon is successful, right?
Yeah.
It just comes from Jeff Bezos, and it filters down, and everyone buys into that, right? We Amazon is a book-selling company in the beginning, and now... Amazon Web Services is the biggest cloud platform.
I think it's really interesting. It's both ironic and what's the opposite of ironic? Completely unironic, I guess, that one of the most innovative companies in tech right now would have come from being a book company.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Innovate or die, I guess it's really the way it's always been. We've always got to change. That's always something that's going to happen. So, I don't know if it was anticipating the change or, right time, right place sort of thing. And just having, tons and tons of servers and someone said, hey, you know what? We've got all this, all these servers sitting there and we're not using them as much as we would like. Or
yeah, I think, Amazon Web Services started in 2006 after Amazon had been running for quite a while.
Right.
And as part of running Amazon.com, the company built up this expertise in operating data centers,
right?
And then, somebody had the idea, hey, we're really good at this.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, not everyone, but most people need this.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of tech companies need this.
Almost
this
everyone. So it's an interesting thing. Even people who aren't building on top of Amazon are still using it a lot.
Yeah.
Like the apps that you use on a daily basis are, you know, Amazon, running on Amazon.
It's probably safe to say that pretty much everyone in the modern world uses AWS mm-hmm. indirectly every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just think of like Netflix switched their payments all to AWS now. So whenever you pay your Netflix bill, that's another AWS service you're using through. Netflix uses all these AWS services. Mm-hmm. They're just stacking on top of stacking, right?
Yeah, Netflix mm-hmm. is one of our favorite like customers to reference because they mm-hmm. run everything on AWS.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting. All right, so let's go back to... another thing that came out from Thursday was, you know, each of the teams has maybe not 100% say, but a lot of say in what technologies they're mm-hmm. using. So can we talk a little bit about that? What sort of technologies might you work on a daily basis on your team? How does that differ is the same as maybe some of the other teams?
Yeah, I mean, across teams, it runs the gamut, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all about making smart choices. Yeah. I would say because we're operating in a highly operational environment, mm-hmm. we don't take a ton of risks. We're not going to chase the latest trend. Mm-hmm. For us, we primarily use Java, mm-hmm. and then we have a number of other tools that people make use of to, you know, boost their own productivity. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the code base that we operate on primarily is written in Java. But other than that, I mean, if you can make an argument to use a new technology because you feel like it's essential to solving the problem, I mean, you'll be able to do that.
So is that your team in particular or everything?
Yeah.
Every single team?
Yeah, I mean, every single team uses what they think they should use.
Mm-hmm. And that includes hardware too. Bill, one of the speakers mentioned like whether it's Windows, Mac, or Linux, like mm-hmm. we just want mm-hmm. you to be able to be the most comfortable, use the tools you want to get the job done that is necessary, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
I thought another interesting thing that was brought up was, I guess, being customer focused mm-hmm. Means that, you know, customers want different things. Mm-hmm. And some customers, they want, you know, I want to be able to use these servers, but I also want to bring my own sort of provisioning tools, or I want to use the ones baked in. Mm-hmm. And so there's always this, or it seems anyway, there's always this mindset of, you know, play well with others.
Yeah.
Because that's what customers want.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, we're trying to be agnostic. We're trying to give customers what they want. People come to Amazon Web Services because it enables them to build things quickly on behalf of their customers.
Right.
And, you know, all sorts of Amazon competitors run on AWS, right?
Do you find that, I don't know if it comes up, but are there times where you have to develop things to support external tools that customers want to use, or does it tend to be more the other way around?
That's a pretty broad question.
It's a pretty broad question, isn't it? Yeah.
I guess in my experience, you know, customer obsession, right? Mm-hmm. If we have customers that are asking for a tool to work in a certain way mm-hmm. because it's going to help them out, you know, we're going to look at that opportunity and see how we can help them.
Right. That's pretty cool. Are there any things you can think of as examples of that?
We usually keep, you know, our customer interaction on specific projects, you know, between us and them.
Right, right. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay, so that's pretty interesting. Why don't you tell us a little bit about culture between teams? So I guess there's an overall Amazon culture, but mm-hmm. there must be team cultures as well.
Yeah, so I'd say team cultures are pretty independent, right? Mm-hmm. Every team operates in the way that they feel like they should. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, our team culture is, you know, obviously continually developing, but, mm-hmm. you know, we're pretty collaborative. We do demos of our work to each other mm-hmm. To solicit feedback. We do design reviews as a team to make sure that, you know, our designs are rock solid going forward and that, you know, we're making use of the wisdom of the entire team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fun culture as well. You know, we really get along. We have, you know, cool team events, regular team lunches. Mm-hmm. A lot of people on the team socialize with each other outside of work.
Awesome patio.
Yeah.
Awesome patio.
Awesome patio.
What about pair programming? Do you any pair?
Pair programming isn't, there's no mandate there. Mm-hmm. People do it because they find it helpful.
Right. Cool. Yeah. That's nice. I think one of the cool things that I saw was that you had all this space in the office for all the potential people that are going to be hired. Maybe you could talk about what is coming up as far as Amazon growing in Vancouver.
Yeah. Amazon Vancouver is growing very quickly in Vancouver. We have 7 floors in the Telus Garden. I'd say we're probably about half capacity right now. Mm-hmm. I checked the job site before I came in. I think there was 220 open jobs in Vancouver right now. Yeah, and I saw, I guess, 15 or 16 different roles as well, like different types of job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Primarily it's, you know, software development engineer, but there's also web development engineers, systems engineers, software development engineers in test, QA engineers, managers, program managers, product managers, HR, recruiting.
So you actually had, I noticed there were some interesting titles like engineer 2 or 3.
Yeah.
What are those titles?
Yeah, it's just like the mark of seniority. Like entry level is SD1, mm-hmm. and then it goes 2, and then 3, and 3 is senior, mm-hmm. and then principal, senior principal, distinguished engineer. Mm-hmm. So at Amazon, the technical career path manages the management career path. Mm-hmm. So at every level, there's a manager role and an engineer role.
Do the distinguished engineers wear top hats and have curly mustaches?
Yeah, like the badges and stuff.
I think they probably should.
I think so, too.
Yeah, they have army flair on.
Yeah, it's to show that Amazon values technical people as much as managers.
It also sounds like Amazon promotes from within, because there's people there that have been there for a long time and mm-hmm. they move up the chain and then eventually they're running some product, like the guy who did the RDS thing, right?
Yeah, it's a very growth oriented culture as well. So I'm always asked, like, what are you doing to develop your people, right? Like one of the leadership principles is hire and develop the best, mm-hmm. and you have to have a development plan for every engineer on the team.
So what would something like that look like?
Making sure that they have the support they need, mm-hmm. and have a project that will push them, that will allow them to grow, right? Mm-hmm. Making sure that they're taking on work of increased complexity.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really cool. So you're not kind of stagnant in mm-hmm. what you're doing.
Yeah, Amazon culture is very growth focused. Mm-hmm. It's very emphasized.
So what would this is something that I'm just curious about. What would turnover look like internally? Like, is there a lot of, you know, oh, I want to go join that team, or I want to be on this team? Are some teams considered really the cool teams? Or is every
RDS team,
Does every team try to be the cool team?
Yeah, I would say, like, you know, retention is a primary focus, right? Like, in any company, if you're not keeping your engineers happy, if you're not challenging them, if they're not growing, they're going to look elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So one of the Amazon policies is that, you know, if you're not happy with your team within Amazon, mm-hmm. you can change teams. There's an internal job board as well, and mm-hmm. you can apply to join a different team. Because we know that unhappy people are going to look elsewhere, mm-hmm. and we want to keep those people within Amazon. Mm-hmm. So people do change teams. It's not crazy, right? That would be disruptive. Generally, people form solid cultures around their team and work to keep engineers engaged, so that they don't want to look elsewhere.
One of the guys, what Amazon called boomeranged, mm-hmm. which was he left and came back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that, it sounded like it might happen where people maybe go outside, explore a little, but they always come back to the Amazon.
I wouldn't say they always come back, but yeah, we have quite a few people that have left and come back over the years, right? I mean, at Amazon, with all of the opportunities and growth, you could spend your entire career there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people do want to do different things.
Yeah.
Something that actually, a conversation in the elevator as we were leaving that came up was somebody said, you know, if they're looking for so many kind of entrepreneurial-minded people mm-hmm. That are going to come up with an idea and champion it, mm-hmm. I wonder, like, how many of those people go off and make their own business. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, maybe that would be a reason to boomerang. It's interesting that Amazon would allow that as well.
For sure.
And I only say that because I worked for a company, Samsung in Korea. Mm-hmm. I worked on contract, so I would be able to kind of quote unquote boomerang. Mm-hmm. But for people who kind of got hired out of university and spent their time kind of climbing the ranks, which happens, I think a lot of people when they get to mid 30s, early 40s, they reach a certain level of seniority. Mm-hmm. And they have a certain level of expertise, and it's like, well, now, you know, do I go and make my own company or not? And if that company fails, then what do you do?
Yeah, that happens, right? Yeah. People have left and created very successful startups. Mm-hmm. People have left and created not as successful startups, right?
What are their names?
Actually, I think A Thinking Ape came from Amazon people.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's
their
awesome.
Their founders worked at Amazon back in, that's a local example.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon also provides the career path internally, so that if you want to be entrepreneurial, you can do that in a pretty safe environment by you know, starting a new web service kind of thing.
That sounds pretty cool. Yeah. Okay. So, Chris, are you currently hiring for your team?
Of course, I'm hiring. Yeah, we're all hiring. Yeah, I'm hiring engineers of all levels for RDS.
And what are you looking for?
We're looking for people that align with the leadership principles first and foremost, and then, you know, talented engineers, people with problem solving skills, you know, that understand how the web is built and fit together. Yeah, I mean, just strong computer scientists and engineers.
Does it sound like we've heard before from some companies about their knowledge of the stack is at various levels, since you're using a lot of Java? Is there, you know, you might need to know a little bit of Java?
No, I wouldn't say that's true. I think we're pretty language agnostic in the hiring process. And sometimes people get hired for a specific team and, you know, Amazon feels that they would be a better fit for a different team, and they'll run that by the person who got the job offer and give them the chance to choose between teams. But the hiring process is completely language agnostic.
Awesome. Cool.
Nice. All right. So any closing comments, Chris?
Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much for being on.
Thanks for coming on Thursday. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great.
Looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, we'll hopefully do another one soon. We'll learn from what went well and what didn't go as well, and the next one will be better than the first one.
Sounds good. And thank you for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.